Hey, movie lovers, you can enjoy Real Nerds Podcast in many ways. You can go to our website, realnerdspodcast.com. There you'll find articles and the podcast. You can go to our YouTube channel, and you will see the Real Nerds Pod Show. We're also on Blue Sky. Hey, did you know Facebook is still a thing for people? Yep, we're on there too. We are also on Threads. There are many ways to interact with us. All our film adventures are posted on Instagram. If you have a social media account, you can find the Real Nerds Podcast.
Good evening. I'm Robert Stack, and you are listening to Real Nerds Podcast, which will make you want to hang yourself by the neck in your fucking closet.
Well, a real nerd knows who shot, and a real nerd can follow the plot, and a real nerd
doesn't
can
be- talk through film. I'm sorry.
Take it outside.
Well, a real nerd knows who shot, and a real nerd can follow the plot, and a real nerd will give it all they got. Lights, camera, action.
Hey, everybody. It is the last episode of the year for the Real Nerds Podcast, where every week we see a new movie and we podcast our experience to the world. This week we saw Anaconda 2025. I am joined always by Brad.
I'm here.
Hey, you should be more excited to be talking to me, Brad.
I'm just tired and stretching.
Are you more excited to see me next week for Filmsplosion?
Yeah, I'm saving off all of my energy for that.
Perfect.
I got to deal with you, and then I got to deal with Corinne and Zach. So I just got to store all that energy, and then I'll release it. You know, it'll be a good show. It'd be nice to do a film explosion where I'm not half asleep.
Yeah. You know, we actually planned it out, you know, this time and give everybody enough heads up.
Yeah.
You know, it's there's in the afternoon.
There's nothing that can go wrong that'll, you know, keep me from sleeping the night before. Nothing. Yeah, nothing will happen.
It's locked, stocked, and ready to go, baby.
Yep. I've had that Blu-ray done for weeks now.
Oh, yeah, you have. Well, wait. How can you? Maybe Anaconda made the list.
Oh, right. Yeah.
You fucking idiot. You don't even know. Don't even know.
In anticipation of everyone's reviews, I was like, it's not going to be on anyone's list. Yeah.
Have you ever done that for a film explosion? Have you ever said, I'm going to start making it, and then someone throws a fucking wrench in it?
I think so. Not recently, but I think back in the old days, I didn't make a disc, but I think I kind of expected all the lists to be done, and then someone would like spend that one week catching up to some things, and then be like, oh, they sent me like a new list. Great. Like, I've already downloaded all the films, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, well, hopefully it doesn't happen this year.
Although mine, I did like down to the wire. Well, I guess there's still some time, but like I've really been flip flopping that 10 spot.
Yeah,
a lot of stuff.
Me too. I've been struggling, and I really tried hard to get in We Bury the Dead this year, but I just ran out of time. So I don't think I'm going to be able to make it because it's only playing at, I think, Alamo Sloan's Lake. Until it expands nationwide on the 9th, but oh well.
Yeah, well, technically it has been at the Alamo, but its real release date is January, so.
Yeah. I know. Bastards.
Yes, people are so fond of telling me what specific release dates mean when I do my film explosions. Technically, We Bury the Dead is for next year.
Yeah, it's always hard, though, because we don't live in New York or Los Angeles, so movies like that will come out, you know, early.
Yeah.
In, I don't know, 10, 15 theaters. And then at the beginning of the year here in Denver, we'll get them, you know, something like that Will Arnett movie I think looks good, and a couple other ones I can't remember off the top of my head right now. But anyways, we'll also talk about the movies we watched throughout the week. And Brad, I'm going to start off the show with something different.
Okay.
Corinne sent us a Showtime, and here's Corinne.
Hey, nerds. Corinne here for another installment of Showtime, where I tell you all about something cool I've been watching lately. This week, you're getting a doubleheader from me of two new movies I saw in the theater today. I did not plan on this. Story time. So for the past few weeks, like almost 2 months now, I've been, like I said, I've been doing these movie nights with my friends on Sundays. So I've been like hiking in the mornings, and then I'll host the movie nights in the evenings, or like late afternoons into the evenings. But today, one of my friends who's been coming to the movie nights, she needed help moving. So instead, I spent the morning and early afternoon helping her move. And we got done, I guess it was like 2:30, 3 o'clock. And I was just so hot because it was like over 90 in Denver today. And I was like, I need to sit somewhere with air conditioning because we don't have air conditioning in my apartment. Yeah, it's kind of the worst. But anyway, I was like, I need True Blue air conditioning. Like, I don't care. So I had the bright idea. I was like, I'll just go to the movies. Like, cause the AC is always like, you know, sometimes they crank it up so much you're like actually cold in there. And I'm like, yeah, that's what I want right now. So I kind of didn't really care what movie I saw. I just really needed to get out of the heat and just sit. So I ended up going to back-to-back showings of Lilo and Stitch and How to Train Your Dragon, the live action. Both of them are live action adaptations. I did not plan that. Like I said, I was actually trying to go to How to Train Your Dragon, but I missed like the showing I was trying to get to, and I was like, well, Lilo and Stitch is on here in like 10 minutes. I'll just go to that one. And I was like this close to walking out because the air conditioning in that theater didn't seem to be on, or it wasn't working very well because it was kind of, it wasn't like hot, but it was kind of stuffy and warm. You know what I'm talking about? Where it's like, it's not boiling, but it's just, yeah, you get it probably. So I was like, I was this close to walking out, but I'm like, I'll give it a few minutes. Oh my gosh. Side note. Fuck Regal. 30 minutes of commercials and previews. The showtime was 3:30. The movie didn't start until 4. So fuck them. I'm getting so tired of it. I'll get to talk about How to Train Your Dragon later. But I should say that before I saw both of these movies, I had heard things online about things they changed, things they didn't change, what people generally thought of them. So it was probably a good thing that I heard spoilers for Lilo and Stitch, the new one. It was a good thing that I heard beforehand that instead of, like in the original, Lilo and Nani staying together and forming this new family, you know, with like David and Stitch and, you know, kind of this Pleakley and Jumba and Cobra pops in every now and again. And, you know, that's, I know, it's so cute. But now we get Nani going to school in San Diego. It's so stupid. Surely they would have a fantastic marine biology program in Hawaii. Even if it was on a different island, at least it would still be in the same state or same general area. I don't know. Goodness. Anyway, so yeah, that pissed me off. But again, I knew that going into it. So, good things I can say about it. It looked pretty good compared to How to Train Your Dragon. I could tell they used a lot of real locations. Obviously, there was some green screen, especially with the aliens and stuff. But it's like, I could tell, you know, there were a lot of real places, real locations used. Stitch actually looked pretty good, at least as far as, like, realism. I have problems with his design. I think his nose, he reminds me of those, like, inbred pugs that have the little, like, nose that is, like, way too far into their head. They just look like they have no snout. No nose. Like, they just have, like, a face. Like, there isn't a nose. It pissed me off. Anyway, I thought the actor, weirdly, I'm like, I thought the actor who did Pleakley was, well, I don't know if I'd say he's the best one, but I felt like he was the closest to his animated counterpart in terms of just personality and general vibe. I thought Lilo and Nani were a little bit different. Lilo was definitely toned down as far as, like, her eccentricities and a lot of her acting out. And Nani, I mean, it wasn't too far off. And honestly, I thought that the guy who plays Bleakley and then the two sisters, they were probably the best actors in the movie, or at least as far as like correlated to the animated counterparts. I did not like Jumbo whatsoever. It was so weird seeing his design in general. Like, I thought Pleakley looked okay as an alien, but Jumbo just looked terrible. I can't explain it. And then just every time his mouth moved and Zach Galifianakis' voice came out, I was like, I cannot. I don't know. I'm not saying that I needed Jumbo to have that Russian accent, that trademark Russian accent that he has in the original, but just hearing Zach Galifianakis' voice come out of Jumba, I was like, no, this does not work. Maybe he didn't have to be Russian, but he definitely should not have been Zach Galifianakis. For what it's worth, I did buy the bond between Lilo and Stitch. I thought that was a pretty core component that worked in this version of the movie that carried over from the original. It's like, they didn't hit every landing, or they didn't hit all the marks that they needed to the way the original did, but at least that one, I did buy it. You know, I did buy that Stitch and Lilo had really bonded, and that moment where he sinks at the bottom and he like lets go of her hand so she can float up to the surface, and she can basically sacrifices himself so she's not trying to save him, and ends up drowning herself. So, yeah, that was nice. I thought that there should have been a few moments between him and Nani, because I never felt like Nani ever really got to bond with Stitch. Admittedly, I don't think it's been a while since I've seen the animated version, but I think that we could have had, even in the animated version, probably a little bit more between them two, but in this version, there's, like, nothing. When she helps carry him underwater and saves his life, that's I think the first major moment between them, and it's like, it would have been nice. Even in the hospital, you know, David gets that moment where he looks at Stitch and he's like, yeah, you know, I thought that, you know, they had a chance, and then you came along, which is from the original, but it's like, I don't know, maybe Nani could have said it or something. I have no idea, but I liked Hannah Waddingham as the Grand Councilwoman. I did not like the changes to Cobra. I didn't think I would care so much, but honestly, I'm like, nope, it just doesn't hit the same way. So yeah, not the worst movie, and certainly not, well, in terms of just general, like, if this had just been its own movie, I think it would have been okay, but it is a terrible adaptation of the animated movie. So, but moving on to How to Train Your Dragon. So this, like I said, I was planning to see How to Train Your Dragon initially, and then I ended up settling for Lilo and Stitch. But then as I was walking out, I was like, you know what? I've got time, and there's another showing of How to Train Your Dragon on starting, like, right now. So I just, like, you know, went in there, and I was like, yeah. I missed the first, like, 2 or 3 minutes, the very beginning of the intro where he's talking about Burke. I kind of came in, like, halfway through that sequence. Like, he must have already introduced Astrid and everybody else, because I'm like, well, I already know them from the animated version. So I do like the How to Train Your Dragon movies. I think I've had one or multiple on my film explosion list in the past. I haven't seen the first one all the way through in a while. I've watched clips a lot in the last few years, but yeah. I heard people beforehand saying, like, oh, it's basically a shot-for-shot remake. And, yep, that's pretty much what it is. Even just the framing, the lighting, the way that people are staged, like, just even the angles of the shots are very, it's like, okay, spoilers again for How to Train Your Dragon, both versions. So, like, they're at the very end, when Hiccup is going to fight the alpha dragon thing. and like Stoic's talking to him and says like, you know, I'm so proud you're my son or whatever. It's like both versions, we get this shot of like Stoic looking up at Hiccup as he's sitting on Toothless. Both of them are looking, you know, like Stoic is looking, it's the same angle. It's the exact same shot, like the same, you know, kind of like a medium close up on him. It's like, it's so, you couldn't even have had him on the other side of Hiccup at least. Like instead of on Hiccup's left, he could have been on Hiccup's right or something, just to switch it up a little bit or do like a wide shot. Like, oh my gosh, like the fucking, like they just used the storyboards or whatever for this movie. And they just said, yep, we're doing that. Yep, we're doing that. Like the, of course, the iconic moment where Hiccup touches Toothless for the first time. They even do the, so Hiccup extends his hand and Toothless, like the lighting and everything. Again, the shot is the exact same. The angle, the framing, everything is the exact same, except it's just live action now. And there's a moment where Toothless kind of goes in a little bit, hesitates, pulls back, and then goes in and touches Hiccup's hand. And apparently, from the original animated movie, that was like an animation glitch that was in the original version. But they liked it enough that they kept it in because they liked how it, you know, like it just kind of helped build up to that moment a little bit better. Yeah, so that bothered me. and again, there weren't a ton of changes. I think there's like, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 new scenes, nothing crazy. But there are just some weird little differences I noticed with some of the iconic moments. Like they changed the exact sequence of some lines. So like when Hiccup is going to kill Toothless there at the very beginning, and he's going to stab him, and he's trying to like work himself up to it. In the animated version, he says like, I'm a Viking, I'm a Viking. Like he really tries to, you know, pump himself up to do it. And then he can't. But in this one, he didn't say that. And it bothered me because I'm like, that's the whole point is like, Hiccup is trying so hard to fit in with the Vikings. Like he's trying so hard to become like them. And the moral of the story is that they actually need to become more like him, that it's good that he thinks differently than they do. And that they need to learn from him rather than just him learning from them. And also the sequence at the very end where after Toothless has saved Hiccup, but he doesn't reveal it yet. And Stoic's like crying, because he thinks Hiccup's dead. And in the original animated version, Stoic approaches Toothless. Toothless is awake, and he tells Toothless, I'm sorry. And that's when Toothless reveals that Hiccup's actually alive, that he saved him. And then in this new version, Stoic just says, I'm sorry. Like, Toothless isn't even awake yet. There's like a full minute with Stoic, like, kind of fake, not fake crying, but, you know, he's just emotional. And then Toothless wakes up and reveals that Hiccup's alive. And it's like, what the fuck? Why did you change that? That was such a good moment that they had between them in the animated version where, yeah, where Stoic is genuinely apologetic to Toothless. And there's this understanding between them that Toothless realizes, like, no, this guy's, like, we had our differences, but he's a good dude. And he cares about his son. He, you know, like, we both care about Hiccup. So, yeah, I'm sorry. There's just a lot of things that bothered me about. If I had to give the edge to one over the other, I might go Lilo and Stitch as much as I hated how it ended. But I was like, you know what? At least it got me invested in Lilo and Stitch's dynamic. And the whole, I mean, yes, there were a lot of bits of it missing, the whole ugly duckling thing. But I do think the core of it was still there. But with How to Train Your Dragon, it just didn't feel right. It felt like a live action reenactment of a cartoon. I don't know how to explain it properly. The best I could give you is it's like, it felt like medieval times where everybody's just like in costume and they're pretending to be. I know that that's what acting is, but it didn't feel like they were immersed in this world. It just felt like they were acting it out. I think another way to explain it is like the TV show Once Upon a Time. It kind of reminded me of that in the same sense where it was just, it didn't feel like a live action version of a story. This did not feel like the real world. Like, yes, these are real actors, but this did not feel like a real, quote, real story. This felt like people acting out a cartoon. It just did not work for me. I'm not very articulate about explaining it, but I guess I wanted it to feel more emotional and more weighty than it did. Like, it still feels very much like a cartoon. And I love the original movie, but there are certain liberties that you get with animation or with a cartoon that you don't get when it's live action. Like, again, there are certain emotional beats that, you know, for the few scenes that they added into the movie, I think that they should have added more. There was a beat between when Hiccup returns from flying around with Astrid and they see the alpha dragon or whatever. And then, like, the next morning he's going to fight his dragon in the trial or whatever. I felt like there should have been a scene there where he, like, goes back home. Maybe his dad asks him, like, wait, where have you been? And then they have this kind of awkward conversation about, like, how his dad is so proud of him and how he's, like, excited for Hiccup to be in the trial tomorrow and all this stuff. And it just, you know, builds on Hiccup's insecurities and failures, all that stuff. Yeah. I'm like, I know, live action, I know that the guy who did the live action How to Train Your Dragon, he was one of the original directors for the animated movie, and they basically told him, you know, like, if you don't do it, we'll get somebody else to do it, and so he was like, fine. Like, first of all, what a terrible ultimatum to have to give one of your directors of, like, you better do this or we're, like, if you don't, we'll get somebody else who will, and they'll just butcher it, so, like, at least if you make it, it'll be decent. But I do feel bad in some regards for the creators who have to deal with these live-action remakes, because, like, you play it too safe, you don't make a lot of changes, people get mad, you make too many changes, people get mad. So I guess the moral of the story is making changes, whether it's small or large, it should have a point. It should be in line with, it should be in line with what this version of the movie is trying to do. I get that it's different. You know, if the animated Lilo and Stitch wanted to have this story that was talking about, like, colonialism and imperialism and had these undertones of, like, how you know, Native Hawaiian people don't even, you know, they're a tourist attraction in their own home, and how the government is separating these two sisters. You don't get that with this new version. But it's like, okay, I guess they weren't trying to do that, but it still feels really, yeah, because the whole time they're talking about Ohana. Ohana means family. Nobody gets left behind. And then, oh, screw that, because Nani goes off to college anyway. And I know that they use, like, oh, the teleport gun. It's like, that's just such a cop-out. Sorry. I'm ranting on them over time anyway, but thanks for letting me rant, nerds. And I'll talk to you guys next time about something. Just kidding. Present day Corinne here again. That was a long one. Younger me. What the hell? So this was from back in June. As you can see, I had an interesting time at the movie theaters. Side note, neither of these are going to make my Filmsplosion list. But I will talk to you guys next time, hopefully at Filmsplosion. But until then, keep it real, nerds. Bye.
Oh, that Corinne.
Wow. We led the show with 15 minutes of Corinne. What's going on?
It's because, you know, I'm an equal opportunity caster. Whatever that means.
Yeah, I don't know what that means.
Well, I was trying to say, instead of podcast, I was trying to hippify it, and then I realized I'm not cool, so.
Dude, you're so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks, Corinne.
Yeah, thanks, as always, Corinne. This week, Brad, we saw Anaconda. Do you recommend the reimagined Anaconda?
It's fun. I don't know if it's not great. It is kind of fun, and it definitely feels like there was a script, and then in the editing process, you know, some decisions were made, and it got like re-edited because there's parts of the movie that just feel like chopped up pretty bad. So, Paul Rudd and Jack Black, and as a filmmaker, because what they're doing is filmmaking, those jokes really land with me. Everything else is just kind of meh.
Yeah, it's kind of I'm 100% agree with you. There's some parts that are just absurd and funny, and then I can't tell if it wants to be taken seriously. It's really choppy at some points. Here's the trailer for Anaconda.
This holiday season, only one cinematic event is so big, it will leave you breathless.
This is Anaconda. We've dreamed of making this movie ever since we were kids. Action! Now, we need to find the snake for our snake movie.
What was that noise?
My Anaconda!
We came here to make Anaconda. Now we are in it.
There are snakes around here. I can feel it.
What does it feel like?
I don't know. It's just very snakey.
Is that like a technical term?
Turn around! Oh, ah! Stick it out! Even white boys got to shout!
And now we die!
Go faster! It's that dog part! What do you want, a Tokyo Drift?
My Anaconda don't want none unless you got...
Who the hell is that? Ice Cube?
You're gonna need that.
Oh,
are you sure?
Of course.
I got another one. Respect.
My Anaconda.
Man, the trailer and the movie got a lot of mileage off of Sir Mix-a-Lot's "Baby Got Back." Just saying.
Yeah, that song was out before the original was made too, right? So, do they even use that in the original Anaconda's marketing?
I don't think so. But remember, his Anaconda, he's talking about his dick. So, right. It's very. It doesn't really fit the film. In this in the 2025 Anaconda, Jack Black is an aspiring filmmaker who is stuck in his home town of, what was the city they lived in?
Oh shit, it was
somewhere, Buffalo. And
oh yeah, duh.
It took me a little bit to get there. And he just does wedding videos, and he wants to make them epic, which reminded me a lot of you, where you don't like to do things.
Wedding videos. Yeah.
Well, not necessarily wedding videos, but you know how you always want to make something a little more. I don't know if flashy is the right word, but more fun than just your straightforward video. And his friend, who's played by Paul Rudd, he got a huge break, and he was on 4 episodes of SWAT. So he's out in L.A. Being an actor and trying to make it. And it just so happens it's his friend's birthday party. They throw him a surprise party, and while he's there, Paul Rudd lets out that he has the rights to Anaconda and that they should make it. And with the help of his two other friends, they decide that they're going to make a shoestring budget Anaconda.
Yep.
That's the story. But the film opens with this woman and this man looking for gold and killed by a giant snake. So that was a part of the film, Brad, I thought was really underdeveloped. I feel like that lady had a bigger role in the movie.
Yeah.
Because...
Which is Ratcatcher 2, by the way.
Yeah. Because she... she's at, you know, the beginning, then she commandeers the boat because she wants to go find the gold. And then she goes away for a really long time. And then all of a sudden, she inspires Jack Black to write the screenplay around her character. And then he talks about how great of an actress she is, but they only show one scene with her. I don't know. It's really bizarre, right?
Yeah, like, they're on the boat, and all these, like, scenes play out. It's not a huge boat, but she's just not involved for a lot of it. And then after a couple scenes, she's sitting in the meetings with them before she even gets cast. So it's just like... yeah, really bizarre. And it really feels like this story didn't need that at all. Like, they could just Brazil or whatever and make the movie. This subplot of like gold thieves, I guess. It just feels like it got cut out, really. Like, it was probably the primary thing, and then it tested bad, and then they said, like, okay, just focus on the filmmaking aspect and the buddies.
Which was really good. There's so many absurdist humor that I really love in it. And Paul Rudd is brilliant at making you uncomfortable for him in scenes. And, you know, he and Jack Black have great chemistry. It's really lots of fun. But then it kind of devolves into this horror action thing, which I get that that's what Anaconda is, but I wanted it to be, I don't know. I want it to be more insane. You know what I mean? I want them just to go for it.
It was really fun, like when the when they find out that Paul Rudd doesn't have the rights because yeah. There's another like professional crew filming the real Anaconda sequel.
See, I think that was really fascinating. I would have liked to see their half of the story and then the Paul Rudd half of the story. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Or take out the gold subplot and like they're in a race against time to beat the other crew to making the next Anaconda movie.
Exactly.
And they have no budget and they have all the budget. Meanwhile,
which would have been fun, and they would have sabotaged the other.
Yeah. And the snakes terrorizing him.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just because it's almost there. I mean, the part where Jack Black's eaten, which the trailer kind of spoils for you. But I like that they stuffed a dead squirrel in his mouth for no reason.
Yeah. What other funny things happened? Just kidding. It's been a minute for me.
Yeah, me too.
You saw it more recently than I did.
Yeah, not that much more recent. you know, I also in the trailer, and this is why I think there's way more to the movie and way more alternate takes, because in the trailer they also spoil that Paul Rudd kills the snake, and when he throws it in the trailer, he goes, "Maybe he'll be okay." in the movie, it's a slow motion. Oh shit!
Yeah, alternate take.
Yeah, so I'm guessing there's a lot of improv in this movie, and they're trying to cut around it after they cut some of the subplot, which I think really hurt the pacing of the film.
Yeah, there's a lot of funny stuff with the snake trainer. I didn't think he'd be like that much of an integral part to the film. And then like. You stayed past the credits, obviously, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, so he's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, I mean, the movie's fun, and, I think I said, so is it's Thandie Newton is in this film, or maybe I didn't say anything, I just forgot to say. You know, and her story is really interesting, but I also feel she got kind of cut out as well. I don't know. I feel this movie should have been about, I hardly ever say movie should be longer, but in this case, I feel like it should have been.
Yeah. And she's part of the core group of filmmakers too, when they're kids. But yeah, she went off and got the professional like lawyer career.
So. Yeah. And Steve Zahn is like, he's the right amount in the movie. Cause he's really silly. And I mean, he's always funny in movies. So I appreciated him, but you know, I don't know, because I actually really got into it too when Paul Rudd, you know, goes away and he finds the total destruction of the real Anaconda movie boat. I thought was really cool that the real Anaconda movie was, you know, terrorized by the actual huge snake. I thought it was a kind of a cool little, I don't know, but. And Ice Cube is funny.
Oh yeah, the finale when
he's the only one who escaped the boat. This.
Yeah,
get a selfie with him right away.
What was I going to say? The callback to the like how they kill the snake too was pretty good.
Yeah, I haven't seen the original Anaconda in forever.
I remember not being at all.
I'm not the biggest fan of it. I mean, spoilers, J-Lo does make an appearance in this movie,
oh,
too.
Oh, that's right, yeah. God, that just reminded me of I Know What You Did Last Summer sequel that came out earlier this year, where it was, like, really billed as, like, new people, and then really by the end it was like, oh, I think they're moving forward with the original cast. That's what that felt like, having Ice Cube and J-Lo in this. It's like, oh, I think they want to make the direct sequel now.
Yeah, but it makes more sense than, you know, Freddie Prinze Jr. being the killer in I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Yeah.
I forgot that movie came out this year. Fuck.
Oh, so it's not on your list for Film Explosion, I'm guessing?
Oh, spoilers.
You found something for your 10 slot.
Yeah. See, I was going to make it my ringer this year, but I guess not.
Do you think they'll get to sequel 7 like Scream?
I don't think so. That trailer for Scream 7 is really cool. I like it.
No, I don't think I watched it yet.
No.
I don't watch a lot of trailers on the internet anymore.
Oh, no, I didn't see it on the internet. In the future, at some point, I see it before one of my movies I see in the future. So,
Gotcha.
I think. I mean, I'm just guessing I'm going to see it.
Fingers crossed it'll happen.
Yeah.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah. Cool. Hey, we watch films throughout the week in a segment I call What We've Been Watching.
So, this is the stuff we've been watching.
Brad, what'd you watch this week?
Oh, boy, so much stuff. Just trying to cram all those movies into the end of the year so I can...
They could make it to 200?
Oh, I've surpassed 200, my friend. Finish the year, unless anything else pops up. It'll be 215 for me.
Yeah. Damn.
215, my ass in a seat in a theater. And one of those was We Bury the Dead, because I saw it at a Monday Mystery screening.
Jealous.
And it's pretty good. If you're looking for like a hardcore zombie movie, that's probably not it. But it actually infuses some new stuff into that genre. Like very, very minimal zombie stuff. And it's really, follows Daisy Ridley's character on kind of like an odyssey of, you know, she wants to track down her husband and, what that really means to her, I guess, without spoiling things. But yeah,
I'm going to make it one of our films of the weeks in 2 weeks, right?
Oh, so I should stop talking about it?
If you want, or you can keep talking. I don't care. I can make it just Primate if you want.
No, I'll just shut up. I'll just say it was pretty good. I also saw Marty Supreme. Are you going to make that a movie of the week?
No.
All right. Marty Supreme is, I would say it's like Uncut Gems, but I don't know, trying to make the main character somewhat appealing.
Unlike Uncut Gems.
You're sort of rooting for him.
Made by the same guy, right?
Exactly. But I would say Marty is also not like an admirable character either, who also just makes tons of bad decisions and doubles down on them and makes things worse. It's probably like less stressful than Uncut Gems. It has more of like a... I don't know, it felt like a Scorsese movie, where it like takes place like a lot around like a lot of time and a lot of different characters, whereas Uncut Gems felt very like, you know, this is 5 hours of someone's day.
Yeah.
So yeah, it goes to a lot more places. It's bigger, it's more expansive of a story about this guy who's really into ping pong and kind of drags everyone down with him in his quest to be the best. So, but yeah, it's got some fun parts. Chalamet's great in it. I mean, everyone is. Again, at the end, you're like, well, I don't really care if about this guy's success or not, because he kind of sucks as a person. So, whatever. I also saw Song Sung Blue, which is about the Neil Diamond impersonators.
Yep.
And it's based on a real life story, and two things happen in it where you're like, that happened in real life? That's crazy. But Hugh Jackman is this down and out musician who pretend like there's a whole like traveling band of impersonators for all different artists. But he meets Kate Hudson's character, who does Patsy Cline, I think, early on. And they hit it off, and they decide to do a Neil Diamond experience. And bad stuff happens to them as they're, like, finally about to make it. Pearl Jam even invites them to, like, open for them. And then just, like, bad things happen. And Kate Hudson falls into this deep depression that Hugh Jackman really can't help her out of. So it really, like, fractures their relationship. And, without spoiling the end, it's one of the most tragic like endings I think I've seen in a while, but also sort of triumphant. So, pretty good. It's what do you say?
I said nice.
Yeah, and then I also saw The Housemaid.
I did too.
Oh, cool. I'll do The Secret Agent, and then we'll do Housemaid together.
Cool.
I also saw The Secret Agent. It's about this guy, and I keep forgetting what South American country it was, but I think it's just Brazil. He's part of like this resistance group, and he's like hiding out with these other people who've been like labeled problematic by the government, and they're trying to get out. And he has a son there, and it's really cool how the movie, like, production wise it really feels like you're watching a movie from the 70s. Like, everything looks great, but I was like constantly baffled about like what, as evidenced by what I just said, I wasn't sure like what the actual plot of the movie was like directed toward, because it feels like it veers in a bunch of different possible, like, because they're tackling a bunch of different issues. And, you know, you think you're following this guy, but there's also these ancillary characters that have like their own stories. And, you know, the secret, you think he's like a secret agent, like from some other like agency, like infiltrating this and trying to like figure stuff out. But I never get the sense that it feels like that's a name assigned to him. He's not really a secret agent. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like the movie's saying that he is, cause it's like dissecting something, but he's not actually like part of any agency. It's a cool insight into that like real life situation that it's based on. A lot of the time I was like, I think this is a spy movie, but now I think it might be a comedy, but it's a drama. No, it's a historical, I was constantly like whiplash back and forth. The craziest thing is there is a cat in the movie, in the apartment that they live in, that is born with two faces. So that was like, whoa.
Creepy.
That is not a CGI cat. That is a real cat with two faces. And the last thing I saw was The Housemaid, which I was like, I guess I'll see this because I've seen everything else in the theater. Paul Feig, it's probably good, and it's pretty good.
It kind of snuck up on me. It's better than I thought it was going to be, because the same thing, sometimes there's only a few movies I can see because I have to take care of my kid and stuff like that, and it was the only movie that was playing like at 10 a.m., at the Alamo. So I said the same thing. I like A Simple Favor. So I said, you know what? Maybe I'll go see it. And it's more fun than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. I'd say for a good hour, you're kind of like, this feels like a straightforward movie. This kind of dumb, like played out exactly as I kind of expected, but then it has that twist in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And that elevated it a bit for me.
Yeah, I liked, I don't know if I want to spoil the twist, but I like how one character you think is one way, but they're way smarter than the film and you are led on to believe. And it takes it like a sharp turn. You know, there's some parts in it I was laughing because my wife loves those Real Housewife shows. And that scene where they're having tea in whatever city room they're in, and how gossipy and catty they are. It just reminded me of that show big time. But yeah, I mean, the characters are really fun. You know, it's just, yeah, it's really, I like how contained the movie is, if that makes sense. You know, it's really just in one setting, and it's, you know, these actors just having fun with the dialogue and the twisty turns of it.
Yeah. It sounds like it's set up for some sequels, so.
Yeah, I guess it's based on a book series, so.
Oh, so they've already written them. All right. Mm-hmm. But yeah, guys like that should get their comeuppance.
They should. I agree. Fuck people like that.
Yeah. What else did you watch?
I watched the Garbage Pail Kids movie, which I hadn't seen.
Ooh, high art.
In a really long time. And the reason I got it is Vinegar Syndrome for Black Friday put out this deluxe 4K of a movie that totally didn't deserve it. I mean, it has one of those magnetic clasp, you know, outer shells. And then the inside, its slip cover is this really cool drawings that kind of look like children's drawings. And it has a 100-page book in it about the movie. I have only watched a few of the special features, but I was reading that it's, you know, about 2 hours of special features. This movie definitely doesn't deserve it. I hadn't seen it in so long. And I'm watching it and I go, man, this movie's a piece of shit. There is really no explanation for the Garbage Pail Kids, except they come in a garbage pail from outer space. And I don't understand why the guy who's in charge of the antique store always wants to keep them in, I guess because they're just mischievous. But they really don't do anything that bad, you know what I mean? They're just, and then they make clothes for this horrible character in it, who's the girlfriend of the town bully who chases a kid and steals his money. And the creature effects for the Garbage Pail Kids are not that impressive. It's just basically a little person wearing a papier-mâché head, it looks like. That has very minimal animatronics associated with it.
Yeah, it's not Jim Henson.
Yeah, no. I think it's actually John Carl Beekler who did Friday 13th Part 7, if I remember correctly. You know, it's one of those movies that's so bad, it's entertaining if how bad it is. But, you know, it's not that great when you watch it with your kid and your kid says, this movie's boring.
It's really bad because kids are supposed to love those like gross card
kids. I said, Kellen, he has boogers and he farts and he says, okay, what's the plot? What's his motivation?
He's like, grow up, dad. Yeah, what's his motivation? what makes him tick?
Yeah, what? Why does he have so many boogers on his face? I don't know.
What's his motivation?
So yeah, it looks great, and I mean, hats off to the one thing I love about Vinegar Syndrome is they take some of the shittiest movies and give them an A+ treatment, and we need more things like that in this world.
Yeah,
that's all I'm saying.
I had the shadow version. I'm just like, man, I would if this movie was a better movie, I would spring for the Vinegar Syndrome because yeah, they do great work on all their releases for these bad films.
Because I think it had ported over all the special features on the Scream Factory one, and then it added a few. And if you got it, because I got it on either Black Friday or I think it was the day after, because their sale went, you know, 2 days. And so that huge deluxe set was marked down from like 60. I remember it being $39 or $42. I can't remember, which is still a lot of money for a movie like that. But you get so much with it that, you know, I don't know if it makes it worth it, but you appreciate it on a different level. I also watched from Arrow Miss 45, which is a revenge thriller about this mute woman who is a seamstress. And on her way home, she gets raped by this one guy. And then when she goes home, another guy is burglarizing her apartment. And he's raping her too, but then she kills him. And then she realizes that there's tons of pieces of shit in the world. And then she just goes around and murders a bunch of dudes who try to rape and kill women. It's pretty fucking badass. I mean, yeah. It's one of those films. Alamo Drafthouse actually owns the rights to it now.
Yeah, I have the Drafthouse Blu-ray of it.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I don't think you can get that one anymore.
Yeah. But yeah, when I watched it, I don't know, I was like bored and I thought like, I thought her performance was weird, but it might be time to revisit it.
Yeah, I mean, she literally just walks around and kills people.
Yeah, I don't think I put together that she was mute.
Yeah. And I mean, it's kind of stylized because it's, I want to say it's early or mid 70s is when it was made. And, you know, there's a part where she's walking in a park in New York and these dudes like catcall her and they encircle her around this pattern thing in the concrete. And she just kills them all by shooting them. It's fucking awesome. I mean, you're not, it's not, you know, great story. It's literally her just killing dudes who, well, I don't want to say people deserve to be murdered, but some people do. So yeah. And yeah, that's what I watched this week.
Cool. What are we watching next week?
Nothing, Brad. Next week is Filmsplosion 2025.
That's right.
Where we'll reveal our top 10 films of the year.
2026, here we come.
Yeah, couldn't come soon enough.
Yeah, maybe after Filmsplosion, we can finally get back to doing that Ninja Turtles show.
I think we promoted
last January.
I started watching them. I have notes on, like, I think the first five episodes.
Yeah. No, we just need to get, like, our regular show on track before we start branching off.
True. So, until next time, we'll see you at the movies.
Thanks for listening to Real Nerds Podcast, a Nebulous Visions production. Stream or download episodes, read articles at realnerdspodcast.com. Stream us on Apple or Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or iHeartRadio. Follow us on Facebook, Real Nerds Podcast. Twitter and Instagram, at Real Nerds. Watch us on YouTube, Real Nerds Podcast. Email us at realnerds@gmail.com. Call us at 720-6NERDS5. Thank you to Sparks Mandrill, Mike at Plan 9 Studios, and Bolognium for all of our groovy theme songs. And that's how you fucking do it!